This podcast is intended for investment professionals only. Hello and welcome to LGIM Talks. The reach for yield, along with strong corporate earnings, has led to spreads remaining tight in the world of high yield and defaults low. So is there anything to upset the high yield apple cart? And more specifically, what role does behavioural finance have to play when selecting high yield opportunities? Well, here to answer these questions and more is Martin Reeves, Head of Global High Yield at LGIM, and who joins me now. Martin, welcome to LGIM Talks.
Hi, Francis. Thanks for having me on again. It's nice to catch up.
Yeah, nice to have you on again. Now, tell us a bit about what's going on in the high yield space, Martin. How has it performed since we last spoke?
Yes, well, I guess we're sort of going through three phases. We had the phase last year of massive recovery. When we last spoke, actually, we were still enjoying that recovery. And now we're probably plateauing that somewhat. So we regard this as an income earning environment. From here on in, the big returns are probably behind us. But having said that, the defaults are incredibly low. So fundamentally attractive. Prices are high. We still think attractive here.
But attractive as well on a relative basis, I suppose, Martin, rather than an absolute one in your view.
Well, yes, I always like to quote Einstein wherever I can. And he taught us that all life is relativity. And people sometimes say high yield. Wow, why are you buying it here? There's not much yield. But it is relative to most fixed income assets having almost zero or negative potential returns over the next couple of years. So a return from high yield, which could be anywhere from 2 to 3 or 4% on an annualized basis the next couple of years, actually, relatively, does look attractive.
And also, I suppose we should talk about the risk-adjusted factor. Bonds relative to equities, returns-wise, don't look as attractive. But then, of course, you don't have the same volatility, the same drawdowns as you might do as an equity.
Exactly. We spend a lot of time looking back through history, drawing up the Sharpe ratio, which is used to look at that volatility, to think about drawdowns. And though in an absolute return basis, no bond is ever going to beat equity over a prolonged period of time, equity, of course, does suffer big drawdowns.
Now, you talk about risk. And of course, in markets at the moment, the risk is that tapering happens. We don't know when exactly, but ECB today might be pulling back on its bond purchases. So the obvious question to ask you, Martin, is how might tapering affect your asset class versus risk-free government bonds?
Well, tapering is definitely going to affect sentiment, and we can see that. And the talk of tapering rather than the actual tapering itself, of course, is what causes volatility. But if we try and look through that and think about the fundamentals, the only reason that tapering is going to be occurring is if the cost of finance is low, if governments can finance at reasonable rates, and if growth is good. If there's any risk to those, then we're going to see continued tapering. So tapering is my friend. When tapering is reduced, it can only be against a strong economic backdrop. And that's perfect for high yield. And of course, high yield, generally most high yield bonds only last or only outstanding for about 3 years. So we don't really have that much risk of inflation. And if tapering leads to yields rising at the 5 and 10 year spots in the yield curve, it doesn't really affect high yield that much or that materially. So tapering is much talked about. Obviously, we've seen highest levels of government intervention we've ever seen. Generally, it is our friend. And tapering occurring, I don't think it will have a material impact over 6 month periods. In fact, if we look back just a month ago when we were sort of in this, when the Fed started talking more aggressively about it, initially all risk markets sold off very heavily and then they rebounded and the S&P hit new highs and actually high yield did tremendously well. 11 straight positive months from high yield, which is one of the records.
That's extraordinary, isn't it? And you're the only fund manager, by the way, I've heard recently to say tapering is my friend. Now, kudos to you, Martin, because you've been at LGIM here for the best part of 10 years, which is seriously impressive. And just tell us then, what have been your key learning points for your strategy? I mean, what have been your guiding principles, if you like?
Well, yes, after 10 years, I should get some sort of remission, I think. But it's been an amazing 10 years. The learning points, one always has to be careful about trying to learn too much. The risk characteristics of high yield stay exactly the same. They're as attractive as they ever were. It's one of the reasons I came here. I've been doing high yield for 25 years, more than that, not out, which would qualify me actually as an opener for England cricket, doing that length of time. And high yield has just done what it has meant to do. It roughly pays the yield, pays the income. And so the learning point is just reinforce what I knew already. Try and avoid panic if you can. And that does come down to the behavioural finance, which you and I have talked about a lot over the years. And I'd love to say that all of life was about doing tremendous Benjamin Graham fundamental analysis and that you're bound to succeed. But I actually don't believe that. And this environment that we've had in the last 10 years after 2008, the euro potentially breaking up, and just the most recent COVID environment just reinforces the elements of behavioural finance, which are markets overshoot. And we're probably going through a bit of a period of what I've learned from behavioural finance is that people do not like high yield, people do not like tapering, despite the fact everyone's anticipating it. Of course, behavioural finance will say, well, it's well priced in and you should probably be trying to take advantage of any sell-off caused by people being worried about tapering. And so those elements which are in the markets, which cause human emotion, news stories, daily meetings, listening to the media, and possibly actually in this world of high social media, means that there is more pressure on emotion probably than there has been. And trying to keep your head while that is occurring is massively important. And so we sometimes quote to ourselves the words from Rudyard Kipling, if. And I quote that, my team has to listen. And I think it's massively important to understand that the fundamentals will out, you will get volatility while that is occurring. And to stay true to yourself and stay true to how you think the fundamentals will play its key, even when under immense pressure.
Yeah, that's interesting, isn't it? So what you're essentially saying is, you know, with behavioural finance and looking at, you know, essentially investor behaviour, would you say then that you try and go against herd mentality, or do you look at the markets and follow the markets as some, you know, momentum fund managers do?
Well, at times, unfortunately, the herd can be right. So what experience teaches you is to try not to follow one strategy all the time. And of course, quantitative models will figure that out as well. So momentum doesn't always work. Trying to go against the tide does not work, as King Canute sort of discovered. Going with the herd makes sense at times. You just got to make sure you're not joining a bunch of lemmings jumping over the edge of a cliff. So experience, and the experience we have in our team, gives us the ability to try and assess the situation that we're in. And it's not quite trying to go against the herd all the time. It's trying to pick the time when you are going to do it. And obviously trying to make sure that you're controlling your risk, controlling your client downsides while that's happening. But what has been reinforced to me over the last 10 years, we have to capture the upside for clients. That is definitely what they expect. And the big upsides only occur infrequently. And that's massively important. And of course, when the potential big upside occurs, it's normally when there's the biggest pressure from the herd to go the other way. Okay. And that's when the team comes in, and also a belief in one's principles and philosophy is key.
That's sound advice, Martin. Now, we at LGIM, and you will know this, one of our key mantras is about responsible investing. Being at the heart of everything we do, and we try and incorporate that across all our asset classes. So just tell us how that works in the high yield space, if you will.
Well, responsible investing, I would have thought that most active investors would always have described themselves as responsible investors. If you take the flip side of that, there are not many people who call themselves irresponsible investors. So naturally, ESG has actually been part of active investor thinking since time immemorial. You've been trying to analyze management teams, how do they work, do they have the right amount which they're spending on innovation all of the time, And if they're doing something which is going to cause them to be litigated against, poisoning the pond, in the common, sadly common American example, are they going to be able to manage that cost? Or more importantly, do they recognize that they need to change? So now we're getting far more explicit than we have ever been. But I would say that all investors have generally been responsible. I think what we're going through is a phase of trying to make that clearer to our investor base, exactly how that works. And our investor base is coming back and telling us this is what they want. But not all investors want the same. Some investors do not want to have fossil fuels. Some investors do. And they're prepared to take that risk because they see it's a transition economy that we're going through to try and get to net zero. And we listen to what our investors want, and we will deliver that to them in a responsible way. But it's an engagement, it's a discussion both with the companies and with the investors.
So just tell us how over history then has responsible investing affected the high yield universe?
I think if you take a step back and look at the bigger picture, high yield has always been about inclusion, creating access to capital, and threatening management teams that have been performed badly, possibly because they didn't have enough diversity. But high yield keeps companies on the straight and narrow because of the threat that they might be bought, and also gives access to capital to people who might never have had that that access before. So you probably can't get an asset class that is a better example of providing equality to people. Now, secondly, within that as well, high yield generally drives efficiencies in companies. That helps drive the economies. Various studies have been done to show how many jobs have been created by high yield companies, because they tend to be small and growing. I mean, we've had Tesla, we've had Twitter in the high yield universe. These are companies that are actually ending up changing the world, and they've come through high yield. Amazon, when I first started 20 years ago, that was high, well, 25, 26 years ago, 28 years ago, that was a high yield company. Apple was a high yield company. I mean, you can't get better examples of an asset class which has been provided, being able to provide risk capital to companies that have changed the world, and I think changed the world in a positive way. So I'm delighted to be involved in high yield, delighted to be involved in high yield at LGIM. And all of our tenants at LGIM about responsible investing are at the heart and have been at the heart of what we do.
Right. You know, that is the key, isn't it? Opportunity for some of these minnows who turn out into the end to be really, really big players. Martin, very interesting. And thanks so much for joining LGIM Talks.
Great. Thanks a lot, Francis.
Enjoyed listening to this podcast, you can leave us a rating, or maybe even a review if you're feeling particularly generous, on the Apple Podcast app. It really helps new listeners to find us, and we're always on the lookout for new ways we can improve. As a reminder, this podcast is intended for investment professionals only and shouldn't be shared with a non-professional audience. This podcast should not be taken as an invitation to deal in legal and general investments. Any views expressed during this recording belong to the individuals and are based on market conditions at the time of the recording and do not reflect the views of legal and general investment management. Forward-looking statements are, by their nature, subject to significant risks and uncertainties and are based on internal forecasts and assumptions and should not be relied upon. Where individual stocks are mentioned, these do not constitute a recommendation to buy or sell any security and are for illustrative purposes only. Legal and general investment management is authorised and regulated by the Financial Conduct Authority. For full terms and conditions, please visit our website. To find more great content, check us out on Twitter, LinkedIn, and our website, lgim.com.